Okay, Bokeh Tov to everybody. Good morning. Welcome everybody. Those of you who are in Eilat, at the OU Eilat trip, then if you're back, then I hope you had a nice time. Those of you who are still in Eilat, then lucky you. The rest of us are in Yerushalayim, although it's nice weather here, Baruch Hashem, today, although it's going to get cold later in the week. So, we have to keep ourselves warm a little bit with some Torah. And I'd like to finish today with the last installment in this series. Next week, I want to give a one-off shiur. We have something left over that we didn't finish some months ago when we were talking about halachic change and development. And the one thing we didn't talk about, which I'd like to deal with next week, which is fascinating, Be'ezrat Hashem, is the way that halacha develops given social changes that have occurred in society, different ways that we view different kinds of people in society, men and women and non-Jews and Jews, etc., and see how the halacha is adapted in different areas or not in order to reflect those changes. That's just a one-off. Then the 2 weeks after that, I'm going to be away. I'm going to be in America. I'm sure there'll be something happening in this slot. And then after that, maybe I'd like to direct in a new way to some issues of minhagim, interesting minhagim, things that we used to do and no longer do, things that we never used to do and now do, and please God, we'll continue with that in the middle to the end of February. But today we have a discussion about something we don't often get a chance to talk about. I'd like to deal with, on this last issue to do with pets and halakha and hashkafa, I'd like to talk a little bit of Hilchos Shabbos. We don't get a lot of Hilchos Shabbos in this slot, and it's always good to brush up on a few issues of halakha, and Hilchos Shabbat comes around every week. So let's have a look at three or four issues, not just on Shabbat, but also we'll talk about guide dogs, and we'll look at a very interesting tshuva of Rav Moshe. Dealing specifically with Shabbat, there are quite a few issues about animals that people often don't think about. The first is the Torah mitzvah of Mechamer. Mechamer is the Isur min HaTorah of making animals work for us on Shabbat. Have a look here, number one. The Yom HaShavi, Shabbat LaHashem Elokecha, the seventh day has to be a Shabbat for Hashem, the day of religious focus. Lo ta'aseh kol melacha, you can't do any work. Ata uvincha uvitecha, now vincha uvitecha, if your children are adults, then they're also included in this mitzvah. If your children are small, then they're not obligated in Torah and mitzvah. So what is it? Ata uvitecha, vincha uvitecha. The answer is, you're not allowed to get your children to work for you on Shabbat. This business of holding up small children to the light switches and hoping that they, you know, turn the lights on or turn the lights off, is not so straightforward in halakha that you can do that at all, even if the children are very young, because you are not allowed to make your children work for you on Shabbos. Avdecha v'amatcha, your servants, male or female, u'behem techa. And your animals are not allowed to work for you either, v'gercha shebisharech, or even the non-Jews who are living with you in Israel as well. Why do animals have to keep Shabbos? Animals are not obligated in Torah mitzvahs. And the answer is, of course, they don't have to keep Shabbos, but you can't use your animals in any way to do something which you wouldn't be allowed to do on Shabbat. And that is the Issa Doraisa, it's the Mitzvah Doraisa of Mechamer. So if you look at number two, the Mishnah Brura summarizes it nicely here. This actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch, which I'm not going into in detail, is talking about what to do if you get caught on Friday afternoon with Shabbos coming in and you're caught in a traffic jam. Shulchan Aruch was dealing with this at this stage. Of course, your traffic jam is more likely to be donkeys and camels and things like that. Can you stick all your stuff on a donkey and get the donkey just to carry it when Shabbat comes in while you walk by the side? And that whole discussion is taking place here. And the Mishnah Brura summarizes this issur and says, Manhig Chamor, if you lead a donkey to Una, which is loaded up with your things, Kruya Mechamer, that is called leading an animal on Shabbat. Ve'issurahu min haTorah. And this is not a rabbinic mitzvah. This is a Torah mitzvah. It's not one of the 39 malachot. It's a separate Torah mitzvah. Nidachsiv, because it says, Lo ta'aseh kol melacha ata, etc. Uvehem techa. The kiblu chazal. And chazal understood, the Rotz Olam, what does this mean? Malacha shena'asit b'shutfut al yidei adam uvehema. If you're doing any malacha on Shabbos that you're not allowed to do, but you're using an animal as a partner with that malacha, dahainu shehitu una, ezidava, it's carrying something for you, v'hu mechamer achren, you're leading it, you're walking after it, and leading you to manhiga, or manhiga, Ali de kolo ukiyot de, either by just talking to it, whistling to it, whatever, you can't get your animal to do anything on Shabbos, which you wouldn't be allowed to do on Shabbos. Therefore, if you trained your dog to go and get the newspaper on Shabbos morning where there's no Erev, and they throw the newspaper into the front yard, and you click, and little Scruffy, or whatever his name is, runs out into the yard and runs back again with the paper, that's an Issa of Mechamer. You can't get your animals to do things for you on Shabbos. What's that? If it, of course, it's an Erev, it's fine, because you can get the paper. You can let the dog... Oh, so the answer is... We'll get to that right now, because sometimes animals do things which really are, it's a good question, sometimes animals do things which really are for them, not for you, which we'll talk about in a minute. But reading the New York Times is not something that even the most intelligent pets are able to do. He doesn't do it for himself, he does it for you. He's trained to do that, and that's a problem, because he's doing it for you, he's not reading the newspaper. Even intelligent owners are sometimes unable to read the newspaper, never mind intelligent pets. Which leads to the next question, which is dog tags. Sometimes animals have tags and collars and things like that. Again, if there's no Arab. If there is an Arab, it's obviously fine. But in many, many places in the world, there is no Arab. I didn't live in Chutz La'aretz anywhere where there was an Arab. I only when I came to Eretz Israel was an Arab. In London, there was no Arab when we were there. So can an animal wear an ID tag in a place without an Arab? So if you look here in the Shulchan Aruch number 3, he says the following, and this is based on a Mishnah in Shabbos. Behema yotzed b'masha mishkameret. An animal can go out with something which protects the animal. Avalim einu mishkameret. But if it's not for the protection of the animal, as havi netirusa yiterasa, this is called an additional unnecessary protection, which is not really for the animal, it's for you, for biyotzer. Behavi masui, and it's a burden, and it's carrying, and therefore it's not carrying for itself, it's carrying for you. Or anything that the animal wears for noise, for just decoration, which the animal doesn't care about, but you do, but not to protect the animal, you're not allowed to let the animal go out. And therefore the poskim, and I've brought you sources at the bottom as to where you can find more about this, talk about different kinds of animal tags. If the animal has a tag with its name on it, in case the animal gets lost, can it wear such a tag on Shabbat with no Eruv? So you have to ask, is it in the interest of the animal to be returned to you if it gets lost? Or is it in the interest of you to get your animal back? So hopefully it's both, and it may be then that that's okay, or it may be that actually the animals do just fine without you, especially cats that basically don't need you at all, and therefore the only reason that you have the name tag on the animal is because you don't want to lose your animal, in which case it's carrying it not for itself, it's carrying the mammoth for you, in which case that's really a shyla. There are some, yes? So that's an interesting question. So then why would the law require that in case, because otherwise the animal will be trapped as a stray and put down because it might be a wild animal. So there the post can bring down that's mutter, because that's for the animal. Meaning if the animal doesn't have a tag and as a result it'll get caught and get exterminated because it couldn't have rabies or something, clearly then the tag is for the benefit of the animal. But if the tag is to show that you paid the tax on owning this animal, then that's nothing to do with the animal, that's to do with you. That's nothing to do with the animal. That's to do with you. Now, one of the answers to deal with this could be if there was a tag which is permanently attached to the animal, which never comes off at any other time, then halachically that may be called bottle. It may be considered now part of the animal, effectively. But these things need to be thought through. There may be halachic solutions, but they need to be considered because this is not so straightforward. A muzzle on a dog is not allowed on Shabbos if the purpose of the muzzle is to stop the dog from biting people. Obviously, because the dog doesn't care if it bites people, it's very happy to bite people. Obviously, if there's an Eruv, it's fine. I'm only talking about when there's no Eruv, but a muzzle is a problem. Clothing. Good. So lock it up inside your yard and don't let it walk around. You know the joke about the guy keeps getting bitten by the neighbor's dog? No muzzle. Yeah? So fine. Couldn't resist that one, sorry. It's an old one. Clothing on the animal. I had a friend when I was a kid that had a very bald animal. He used to wear a little coat in the north of England to keep it warm. That's absolutely fine on Shabbos. No problem, because that's for the dog. But if you want your dog to have frills and bows and all that kind of stuff, then that's just nothing for the dog, and therefore that is halakhically a problem. That's the first smaller issue, which I just wanted to deal with. Go over to page 2, please. Yes. The solution may be... Good, so maybe the Fluffy's mummy can't wear the bow on Shabbos. Fluffy has to wear something else on Shabbos, or stay inside the house. Because you can't, again, if your dog is wearing something and walking around in an Erev, and that something is just for you, not for the dog. It's just for you to feel that it looks nice, then that you wouldn't be allowed to wear it on Shabbos either.
I'm wearing a bow.
Oh, good, good.
My little girl's wearing a bow.
Good, because you are allowed to wear things which are for you on Shabbos. But you're not allowed to wear things which are for someone else on Shabbos. If you're carrying around something on Shabbos around your arm, which is nothing to do with you, but you're carrying it for someone else, that's called carrying. So you have to ask with the dog, is the dog wearing this because this is for the dog, in which case it's fine, just like you can wear your clothes on Shabbos, or is the dog really doing it for somebody else, in which case you're using the dog to carry stuff around for something nothing to do with the dog. Without an Erev, obviously. Okay, so good. Well, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good question. When it comes to people, anything which is considered reasonable clothing, there's a concept of clothing for people. I'm not sure there's a concept of clothing for dogs. No, because the Mishnah clearly says that something which is for protection of the animal, whether it's clothing, whether it's a leash, whether it's this, that clearly is for the animal, and therefore that's the animal's allowed to, the animal doesn't have to keep Shabbos at all. Therefore the animal can do anything that it needs for itself on Shabbos, and if this is to help the animal, that's fine, but if in any way this is for you, then that becomes a shiloh. And there may be different applications and different, and it's going to be complicated sometimes. Is it for me? Is it for the animal? Is it for both? Da, 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 da. So I'm just raising it as a shiloh. I'm not giving any, yes, animal safety will be for the animal, clearly. I'm not a poistic and I'm not giving any psak, but I'm raising these issues because they don't get talked about very often. Look at page number 2. Are you allowed to walk a dog on a leash without an Erev? Obviously if there's an Erev, it's fine. The answer is yes, it's fine to carry around a leash, but there's a condition. Number 4. Hamotzi behema v'hu moshcha ba'asar. If you walk an animal on Shabbos and you're leading it on a leash, tzarech lizaher, you just have to be careful, says the Shulchan Aruch, shelo yetze rosh hachevel mitachat yadot tepach lamata. You can't have the leash hanging down. I remember in London they used to tell us this when there was no Erev, you have a dog, you can't have a leash hanging down more than a tepach from your hand. Because why? The dummy commotion also be other, because it looks as though you're carrying a leash for you. But lo mitchazi ma'asar behem. It doesn't look anymore like it's anything to do with the animal. Again, you're holding a leash with an animal, and it's wrapped around your hand, and it's hanging down. So it looks as though you're carrying something on Shabbos, which is nothing to do with the animal. That you can't do. But as long as you don't have it hanging down, it's fine. The gam lo yaniach harbeh min achevel, and you can't have the leash in a droop, bein yadol behema, between you and the animal, kidei shelo yachvid shelo yagiyah b'tepach hasomach la'aretz. It can't come within a tepach of the ground, because then it looks as though the leash is dragging along the ground and you're carrying the leash. Ve'im hu aruch, and if the leash is too long, so what should you do? Yachruch oisei saviv tzavara. Wrap around the dog, wrap around the neck of the animal or in a safe way. Don't strangle your dog. And then it's for the animal. But again, you just have to bear in mind, if you're in a place without an Erev, you can go walking. Of course, you have to walk your dog, because it's healthy for the dog. The dog will be in pain and unhappy if you don't walk your dog. But the leash just has to be thought through how that works. The big shaila people have today with animals is, are they muktzah or are they not muktzah? And I just want to spend 10 or 15 minutes, or 10 minutes maybe, looking at this issue. I've been around to many people's houses on Shabbos where they have pets. The kids especially like picking up the pets and petting the pets. I suppose that's why they call pets. And is this allowed or is this not? So the Gemara clearly rules that animals are muksa on Shabbos. And we'll talk about why that is in a second. Look at number 5. This is a source we saw a couple of weeks ago about the animal in pain. Amarav hun amarav, Yehud amarav. Behema shenafla l'amat amayim. If your cow falls into a ditch on Shabbos and it's unhappy. So maybe karen v'kastos som iniach tachteh. You can bring pillows and things and put it under the cow to help the cow out of the ditch. V'im alta, if the cow gets out, alta, then it gets out. Says the Gemara, ba'ah, hakabavatl kli me'echono. You're making the cushions muksa by putting them under the cow. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to make something into muksa on Shabbos. The classic example is if there's oil dripping from your candles on Shabbos, says the Gemara, you're not allowed to put a plate under the oil to catch the oil Because since the oil is mukseh, it's not for use on Shabbat, it's set aside for Shabbat candles, you make the plate mukseh by the oil falling on the plate, and you're not allowed to make something mukseh on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, no, it's okay. The Rabbanon, because at the end of the day, making something mukseh is rabbinic, a rabbinic prohibition. Like we said, your animal being in trouble is a doraita. The doraita will override the Rabbanon. But one thing is clear. Nobody suggested that the cow is not mukseh. Everyone agrees that the animal is mukseh. You can't just schlep it out. And there has to be a special heter to put the cushions, etc. under the cow. Otherwise, the cushions would also be mukseh. The answer is tzar bali chaim, okay. But no one suggests like, oh, maybe the animal's not mukseh. No, the animal is mukseh. Why? Why is the animal mukseh? Why are dogs and cats and cows and horses mukseh on Shabbos? So for this, we have to understand Hilchas mukseh properly. So number six, the Magid Mishnah explains. Ha'ifroichim, chicks, little birds. V'shum behema, and any kind of behema, chayim v'oif, chayim, if they're alive. If they're dead, they're obviously, a dead animal is clearly mukseh. Okay, unless it's food, which is a separate question. But if the animal is alive, eino mutarim betiltul, you are not allowed to move that animal, lefishe eino ru'uyim, because it's not mukhan, it's not set aside for use on Shabbos. People often misunderstand mukseh. Mukseh means that anything which is not designated specifically for use on Shabbos is considered mukseh. Mukseh means set aside, katser, from the word katser, set aside. It's not for use on Shabbos. And therefore, it becomes automatically mukseh unless there is some need for it on Shabbos. Now, some things we obviously always need on Shabbos. Food. Who could go without food on Shabbos? And therefore, all food is considered to be appropriate and ready for Shabbos, no matter how out of bounds the food is in that sense. Let's say you have a shop, and the food in your shop is for sale, not for use, for personal use. Nevertheless, because food is so automatically assumed to be needed on Shabbos, you can even dip into your sales stocks, if you like, to bring them into the house, if you own the shop, that food will never be mukseh. But other things, on the other hand, have got nothing to do with Shabbos. What has a cow got to do with Shabbos? What can you do with a cow on Shabbos? Milk it. That's not the cow. You're not using the cow. You only milk it because it's painful for the cow. You can't even use the milk that you milked on Shabbos. So a cow's got nothing to do with Shabbos. It's mukseh. It's not in any side set aside for Shabbos. On Yom Tov, the cow is not mukseh. Why? What can you do with a cow on Yom Tov? Shecht it, and eat it, and cook it. That you could do on Yom Tov. But on Shabbos, there's nothing you can do with a cow, and therefore, it's not in any sense mukhan for Shabbat, and therefore, it is mukseh. Now, the Gemara has a discussion about a bird in a bird cage. Is the bird cage mukseh? And the Gemara concludes that if the bird is dead, the bird cage is mukseh. And Tosfos picks up on this. Look at number seven. This is where we get maybe a little bit of an opening as to whether we can find a heter for pets today. Says Tosfos as follows: Hach b'mayis kinan, the east bay esroach mate. He's quoting the Gemara that says if you have a dead bird, nebach, your budgie dies and it's sitting in your cage, the cage is mukseh. Perush Rav Yosef. He's quoting one of the Balei Tosfot, Rabbeinu Yosef. Not such a well-known one, but he's quoting him here. The loy nakas efrochai. The Gemara didn't use the case of a live bird. Why? Because maybe a live bird is not mukseh, says Rav Yosef. Mishum dechai chazi l'schok bo tinok sheboche. Because a live bird could be given to a child who's crying as a pet on Shabbat. Therefore, maybe a live bird isn't mukseh, said Rav Yosef, and that's why the Gemara gave the case of a dead bird. And therefore this opens the question as to whether indeed there is room to say that a pet does have a use on Shabbos. What's the use? To give to a child to play with. That's a valid use on Shabbat. So this quotes this. And then he rejects it. The ein nira. I don't agree with this, says Tosfos. Because there are other cases in the Gemara where it explicitly says that if a bird hops onto a pot, then while the bird's standing on the pot is mukseh. The Gemara explicitly says that the live bird is still mukseh. It's also to move. Elavadai, he says, I reject this opinion. Balechaim muktim heim. Balechaim, animals are mukseh on Shabbos, and he gives a comparison like what? And this is important. To grogros v'tzimukim. What are grogros v'tzimukim? Grogros, you know what tzimukim are? Raisins. This is talking about dried fruit. If you had dried fruit which was not edible, or not yet dried fruit in the process of drying, and you stuck it somewhere on a roof on Friday afternoon to dry out in the sun over Shabbat, that fruit is muktzah. Even if in the middle of Shabbos you go up there and say, oh look, it's edible now, too late. It was muktzah on Erev Shabbos, you decided not to use it, that's out, it wasn't edible in any sense on Erev Shabbos. So too, the animal is not going to become okay on Shabbos. It's muktzah on the same level of this dried fruit, and therefore it is completely out of bounds. Umakata also gam, miklavim, even the dogs don't eat this fruit, therefore the fruit is muktzah. So too the animals. So Tosfos says, I reject this idea that a pet can be okay on Shabbos, and Rav Yosef's view is rejected. So too, the Rosh is quoted in number 8, which he gives other reasons as well. Look in number 8. The Al Ha'oifas, Loi Malini Libi Lahatir. He's quoting the Rosh here. I don't think you should allow birds on Shabbos. The Ein Lilmud Heta Shimush Balechayim Meheta Kalim. Because animals are even worse than Kalim. What's with Kalim? Kalim, things that have been made by people, to some degree are prepared. Now, it could be a Kali which you don't normally use on Shabbos. A Kli, like a pen. But at least it's been made, at least it's had human input into it, and it's been in some sense manufactured. The irony, maybe it's not an irony, but the halacha clearly is, a pen on Shabbos is less muktzah than a leaf or a stone on Shabbos. Because a leaf or a stone is not even a kli. A pen at least is a kli. And therefore there are certain heterim, I'm sure people are aware in Hilchos Muktzah, if you have a pen, or maybe a mobile phone, something which is a kli, but which is not for Shabbos use, then if it's in the way, you can move it. You have a heter to move it if it's in the way. Or if you need your pen to stir your coffee, and you haven't got a spoon, you have a heter to use such a thing, because machmas gufo, to use it for itself. That heter is only for a kli. It's not for something which is not even a kli. You couldn't pick up a stone in the garden, or a leaf, or a twig, and say, well, I need it, or it's in the way. There is no heter to move it for that. Therefore, says the Rosh here, that an animal is even more muksa than a kli. You can't even go the same heterim. Even a kli which is for prohibited use on Shabbat, like a pen. L'tzarech gufo, you can use it for itself to stir the coffee. Or l'tzarech makomo, or if it's in the way on the Shabbat table, mutter, you can move it. There's a heter for that. About tzroiras, but pebbles or stones, shebachot, which are in your yard, afilo l'tzarech mehem, tzarech gadol, even if you need them completely, also l'tzarech, you can't move them. There is no heter to move a stone in a direct way. Yes. Well, that's a loaded question. Okay, so we'll get to that answer in a minute. Clearly, there's no justification for throwing stones anytime. But the muktzah answer is given by your husband. We'll deal with that in a second. Mishum de'ein torah kli aleihem. Because the stone is not even a kli. It's totally 100% muktzah. Hachanami, so too bebalechayim, so too with animals. The yesh la'asa yoytem ibalechayim, there's even more of a reason with balechayim. Dei mishdamshin bebalechayim, there's no real use for balechayim. The lo plug rabbanan, and I want to just focus on these three words. Lo plug, what does lo plug mean? Lo plug means they didn't distinguish. When the rabbis made rules, rabbinical rules, very often they applied the principle of lo plug. Lo plug means, if we're going to make a rule, people won't take it seriously unless it applies across the board. If it applies yes here, but not there, and yes to you, but not for her, and maybe on this week, but not on that, no, people won't take it seriously. No exceptions. Lo plug means no exceptions. And therefore it says, I don't think you can start saying this animal yes, this animal no. Lo plug rabbanan. Yes. We'll see. We'll talk about set aside in just three minutes. Okay? And therefore he too says, lo plug rabbanan, balechayim are not muksa. Now, how are we going to help our friends who've got pets? Because everyone seems to be turning around and saying, no, pets are completely muksa. Look at number 9. Number 9 is our petach, that will open up this issue a little bit. And it gets to the question of setting things aside. The Tosfos HaRosh, which is an alternative collection of Tosfos, has the same piece but with a slightly different ending. Look at number 9. Harav Rav Yosef, it quotes the same Rav Yosef that we saw in number 7, Perish Dechai Chazi L'Sachek Bo Et Hatzinot Shebochet. That the Chai, the live bird, is able, you were able to give it to a kid to play with as a toy. And he also rejects that, but for a different reason. The Loi Nira, I don't agree with that, Noidera Li, De'im Kein Even Yafa Sehei Muteret L'Tal Tel Mihai Taima. that if an eben, a precious stone, that you might give to a kid to also play with, okay, you have to be perhaps very trusting of your child to give this to the kid, okay? He says, that's also mukta, just like the eben yafah, you can't just give to your kid to play with on Shabbat, so too you can't give the bird. Now, if you remember Tosfos in number 7, he didn't compare the animal to a precious stone. What did he compare it to? No. Do you remember? The dried fruit, the fruit drying on the roof. And the post can pick up on this and say, ah, oh, that's interesting. Because the fruit drying on the roof is muksa no matter what you say on Friday. You can't turn around on Friday afternoon and say, if the fruit dries sufficiently, then, you know, I'll eat it on Shabbos. I'm sorry, it's it, that's it, it's muksa and it's out of bounds. But the Eben Yafa, you can. You can designate something. You can demuksify certain things. And that's what you were saying, and you were saying. I made that word up. But you can demuksify certain things. For example, take a stone. Let's say you have a stone from the yard, and on Friday you say, you know something, this stone will be very useful for me on Shabbos as a paperweight or as to block doors to keep the door open. You can designate that stone and demuksify that stone, and now it's not muksa anymore. And that works for many things. Now, if you compare a pet in that way to the stone, so why can't you demuksify the pet? Why can't you turn around and say, this pet is not a behemoth for schlepping, it's not an animal for eating, it's a friend, it's a family member, this is little, Tiddles the cat, and Tiddles is my friend. And therefore, you demuksify the cat. Maybe you don't even need to say it, maybe it's muvan meilav, maybe it's obvious that Tiddles is a family member, and therefore, you don't have a problem with that. That's the shaila. So the problem, this makes a lot of sense. As a svar, it makes a lot of sense. The problem is, pretty much nobody says it. The Shulchan Aruch, in number 10, rules very clearly, Asa letaltal behema chayva of. No, you can't move your birds or your animals. By the way, there's no isra of muksa to touch muksa. That's an important point. You're always allowed to touch muksa, or even to use muksa. You're just not allowed to move muksa. Okay? So if you have a TV or if you have a DVD player or whatever, you can touch it, you can put your coffee on it, you can do all of those things. You just can't move it. So muksa is not a problem to touch. That's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch in many places. But you aren't allowed to move it. But so he says all the animals are muksa. The Shulchan Aruch Rav even explicitly relates to pets in number 11. The Shulchan Aruch Rav is the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. He says, Asa letalta behema or chaya oid mitei she'enam ru'im b'shabbos. They're not set aside for Shabbos, because she'heim chayim, when they're alive. Afilu oiv sheru'i letzachek bo tinok, even if it is a bird that you can, a child can play with, because she bochei, when the child cries, Asa letaltalo. He says, don't even think about it. Pets are just as muksa as every other animal, and the question is, does anyone say anything different? The truth is that almost all of the modern poskim agree with this approach that the pets are completely muksa. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach clearly says, is quoted in Shmiras Shabbat Hilchos, the pets are muksa. Rav Moshe Feinstein says in a number of places that pets are muksa. In the 8th volume of the Igros Moshe, which came out after Rav Moshe died, which was a little bit controversial because Rav Moshe never saw what was written in the 8th volume, and it was put together by his grandson, Rav Mordechai Tendler, and some people suggested that it's not so clear whether Rav Moshe would have agreed with everything in that. And now nobody can tell. But in the 8th volume, there's another tshuva about animals, in which it says, Rav Moshe says that animals are muksa, and then it adds in the words, Ela im kein hei miyuchadim l'shashuin. Unless they're set aside as toys, brackets, pets, close brackets. So the question is, what do you do with that? It sounds like Rav Moshe is saying the pets are okay. The problem is that everyone's a bit nervous to rely on that particular volume because no one knows exactly whether Rav Moshe said it, and those words are actually in a different font, which looks as though they were added in. There are a few people, for example, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu was quoted by some poskim as saying that pets indeed are not muksa, and there are a couple of poskim that say that. Halacha lemaisa, most poskim today rule the pets are completely muksa. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is quoted as saying that although one should be machmir and treat the pets as muksa, one need not criticize, I quote, those who are lenient, since the matter is in dispute and the reasoning for the leniency is compelling. Meaning, it's very compelling in halacha to argue that you should demuksify the pets. They're now friends. They're not like the behemoths that they had in the time of the Shulchan Aruch. And therefore, there are people who rely on this. and they can't be criticized. But most poskim will tell you the pets are fully muktzeh, and even though you can touch them, you can feed them, of course you must feed them, they'll say that you can't move them, and therefore you have to ask your local Orthodox posek as to what to do with little tittles on Shabbos. One thing is for sure, you have to feed your animals, no question about it. If they're not your animals, there is a problem feeding them, because there is an Isser on Shabbos, an Isser Drabbanon of Tircha, of going to unnecessary trouble, of things that really aren't obligated, a person's not obligated in. Look at number 12. Everyone knows that, you know, when you go down to Tashlich with the fish, people throw stuff to the fish. That is halakhically problematic. Look at number 12. Ein not nimayim v'loy mezonis dipnei devorim. Says the Shulchan Aruch, do not feed the bees on Shabbos. All the doves, for yoni aliyah, or birds, that wild birds that live in the lofts, the lo lifnei chazir, and don't feed the pigs on Shabbos. Aval noisim lifnei avazim, you're allowed to give it to the geese, the tarnigolim, the chickens, the yoni beyatop, and birds which are domesticated, v'chein lifnei kelem shebanot kavalecha, and you can feed your dogs as well. Meaning anything which is your animal, you can feed on Shabbos, but other animals you can't feed on Shabbos. Says the Mishnah Berurah, afilu kelev she'enu megadlo bebeito, even dogs which don't grow up in your home, mutter, you're allowed to feed dogs. Dogs are an exception. Interesting, why? The mitzvah k'zav gam kein litzen lo mezonis, because they bring down that there is actually a little bit of a mitzvah to help dogs. K'mosh amru chazal, because chazal say chaf HaKadosh Baruch Hu, alav HaKadosh Baruch Hu is concerned for the dogs, the fishermen is atav ma'utin, because they find it hard to find their own food. And it all comes back to the Yitzias Mitzrayim as well, that the dogs didn't bark when we came out of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So dogs get a little bit of a, you know, a window. But other animals know. And he says at the end, v'yesh nogin litzen chitim litznei ha'oifas for Shabbat Shira. Have you seen people do this? There's a minhag that people feed the birds on Shabbat Shira. Ve'eino nachon, it is not correct, it is not allowed on Shabbos, shahari eimuz anotan alecha, because the birds, these are wild birds, they're nothing to do with you, you're not allowed to feed them, and therefore you're not allowed to feed the fish during Tashrich either, but you are allowed to feed your animals, and you're also maybe allowed to feed the dogs as well, because the dogs get a special pass, because of other hashkafic issues. A couple of other issues, and then we'll look at trapping, which I think is perhaps the most problematic on Shabbos as well. Animal cages are also muktzah, because if the animals are muktzah, the cages are muktzah, and therefore bird cages, etc. There is a shaila about fish tanks, because fish tanks, from Shlomo Zalman said, really are ornamental now. Fish tanks are almost like, you know, decorations in the house, and once it becomes a decoration, then it's really nothing to do with the fish anymore, and maybe the fish tanks aren't muktzah. Rav Moshe says they are muktzah, so that's a machlokes. Animal waste is muktzah. Just like human waste is muktzah, but there is a heter to remove it if it's offensive to people, or if it's in the way, or it might dirty people, etc. And therefore, I'm not going through it in detail, but number 13 and 14, the Shulchan Aruch clearly rules that if there's animal waste, or anything smelly, in a domesticated area, in a domestic area rather, in an area where people are living, you're allowed to remove it out of covet for the people. But if it's in an area where people are not living, then you can't, because it's muktzah. The shaila is what to do in the streets. People these days are very particular. They don't let their dogs foul in the streets, and in many places there are laws against it. People didn't used to care, and in some places people still don't care. But in many places people do care, and therefore they walk around with their little bag or whatever to make sure that they scoop up whatever the animal leaves behind, dispose of it in an appropriate place. Would that be allowed on Shabbat as well? So the Mishnah Berurah brings down in number 14 that if it's in the public areas, you're allowed to push it to the side. The question is whether today, when pushing it to the side is no longer considered to be acceptable, would you be allowed to pick it up and put it in the garbage? It seems to me that's not such a wild caller that you'd be allowed to do that, especially where people are very offended where this stuff is around, and therefore I don't think that's such a difficult shaila, but we would need to check that. Now, the last issue on Shabbat issues is trapping, and then we'll look at the guide dogs. Trapping is something people don't think of. And trapping is perhaps the most serious of all of the issues we've discussed so far, because trapping is one of the 39 malachot. Meaning muktzah, at the end of the day, is a serious issue, but it's a rabbinic prohibition. However, trapping an animal is a Torah prohibition, which is a capital offense. This is one of the full-blown 39 malachot on Shabbos. Have a look at number 15. Says the Mishnah, Tzvi, if a deer, shenichnas lebayit, walks into your house on Shabbos, the null echad b'fanav, and somebody shuts the door and traps the deer in the house, chayav. Chayav means this is an issa doraisa on Shabbos, a chayav misa, chayav kares, and chayav to bring a korban if they were a shogate. So this is a full-blown breach of Shabbos. Don't trap the deer in the house. So the question is, what about dogs? What about cats? Especially puppies, who are very, eager to run around, and the only way to keep them in the house is to push them in the house and shut the door. Is that going to be allowed or not allowed? So the Gemara debates and says, look, there are different kinds of animals. Look in number 16. Ein sadin dagim min abivarim b'yomtov. You can't trap fish from an aquarium in yomtov. Okay, you can't get fish out of this tank in yomtov. You can't trap the fish. Aval sadin chayv ha'oit min abivarim. But you can trap animals from a pen. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel comes in and says, well, look, it depends on the animal and depends on the pen. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel oimer, lo kol abivarim shavim. Not all pens are the same. V'zeh haklal. This is the rule that you have to follow. Kol hamechuset seder, and this is the halacha. Anything that is basically not yet trapped, you need to trap it more in order to get it. Asur. That's not allowed. V'she'ein hamechuset seder, anything that is effectively trapped, mutar, is okay. So the Gemara fleshes this out. Heichi dami mechuset seder. What does it mean that it's already, or that it's not yet trapped, that it still needs more trapping? Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, on the third line of 16. Kol she'omer, if you have to say to other people, havei mutsuda v'nitsuda, bring a trap and let's try and trap it, then that is called not trapped. Rashi explains, kloma, that means, she'tzarech levakesh tachbulot. What's tachbulot? Tricks. You have to work out some trick in order to grab it. Meaning, if the animal is effectively still at large, and you have to work out a way to grab it, then that's called not trapped, and there's an issa d'oraisa to trap it. So, a deer that's already in a room is effectively trapped. Where's it going to go? All you need to do is reach out and grab it. But a bird, which is trapped in a room, is in no sense trapped. You ever tried picking up a bird when it's flying around the room? You can run around for 5 hours trying to get the bird, and work it out. So it all depends on what the animal is and where it's trapped. Sometimes it's a doraita, sometimes it's not. Amale Abaya, on the fourth line, Abaya says, Ha'avazim v'tarnigolim, there are such things as geese and chickens, she'aimrim, and you have to say about them, havei mutsuda v'nitsuda. And they're wild, and you have to jump on them and trap them, that's a problem. V'tani, and yet it's taught, ha'tsad avazim v'tarnigolim v'yone harudusiyot, patur. And yet it's taught in other places, if you trap these birds, you're patur. Patur normally means it's rabbinically prohibited. It's just not doraisa. So it says again, it depends on the birds. I'm a rabba barbahuna. I'm a shmul. Halalu balim lekluv on the erif. There are animals which basically do what they're told. If the animals come back on their own, when you whistle, they come straight back into their cages, okay? That's fine. But halalu ain't by lekluv on the erif. And there are others that don't. And it basically breaks down into three categories. The halacha lemaisa. Totally wild animals that you can't control at all, there is an issa d'oraisa to trap. Totally domesticated animals that basically do whatever you tell them to do are effectively halachically already trapped. Because if when you whistle, it walks straight into the hat, then that's fine. And everything in between is a big machlokas. If the animal is basically somewhat domesticated, but still is hard to pin down, so there's a machlokas whether that's the rabbanon or whether maybe that's also mutter. And therefore halacha lemaisa, let's say you take your dog for a run and you let it off its leash in the park. I'm not talking about carrying the leash now, because let's assume there is an eruv and it's fine. You're walking around with a leash and the dog's running around the park. Are you allowed to put the leash back on the dog? This is a very big halachic shaila on Shabbos, because if the dog's basically wild, to put the leash on the dog is an issa d'oraita. You're breaking Shabbos completely. So if the dog is completely tame, you just whistle, the dog runs straight up and puts its neck up waiting for the leash, then that's fine, because the dog's trapped in its mind, and therefore that's trapped. If the dog's completely wild, absolutely not. And if it's somewhere in between, then that's a big machlokes as to whether that's allowed or rabbinically not allowed. Yes?
You have to be able to prevent the dog from attacking
people. Okay, so maybe then don't take the dog to the park.
Oh,
meaning there are other alternatives without having to break Shabbos.
Because the rule is that you've got to put
Good, so keep the dog on the leash, then don't let the dog off the leash. If you keep the dog on the leash, then the dog's fine. My wife made an interesting observation. We lived for many years in Hendon, and there's a big, big park where everyone's dogs are running around, and there's a little fenced-off area there where it says, this is the area to allow your children, safe place for children. Okay? So you go to the park around the corner in Yerushalayim, so the whole park's for the children, and there's a little place just for the dogs. That says a lot about the different mentalities of the different places. In England, the children run free and the dogs are in a cage. And in England, the dogs run free and the children are in a cage. Okay, fine. But the answer is, yeah, you might have to protect people from your dog, but you can't break Shabbos. You have to think ahead and work out a way that you're not going to do that. So if you have a small dog, a puppy, etc., you really have to think about this. This is probably halakhically the most problematic thing, and work out how to do this on Shabbos. We once had a bird in the shul on Shabbos, and everyone's trying to work, it happens quite a lot, and everyone's trying to work out what to do, and it's very difficult, because, you know, trying to grab it or something like that, it's a doraita on Shabbos. Yes.
You're sitting in a sukkah, you want a bee, your Shabbos could be under, what do you do?
Okay, so bees, if they're dangerous, then there are other issues, because trapping a bee, or trapping a poisonous insect or whatever, you're not trapping it to use it. You're trapping it to get rid of it, okay? And that may be considered in Shabbos what's called a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa, where normally the malacha of trapping on Shabbos is to use the animal, or because you need the animal, you want the animal. If you're trapping something in order to remove a problem, then that downgrades it to a rabbinic level, and then if there's someone that might be damaged or hurt, that will allow you to break that drabonon. And therefore, if you have someone in your sukkah who is really allergic to bee stings, and there is a bee roaming around the sukkah, then you are absolutely allowed, obligated in fact, to trap it there. Because again, that would be at most rabbinic level trapping, and the fact that there's someone who may be hurt or in danger would allow you to do that. If, God forbid, someone's life is in danger, they may go into some kind of anaphylactic shock or whatever, then you're allowed to do anything to stop that from happening. But yeah, there are hesperians for trapping things in order to avoid them stinging, etc., and that comes up quite a lot. Yes?
I understand the concept of trap. How about a fly
swatter? Well, now you're killing the animal. Killing an animal is another malach on Shabbos. You're not allowed to kill any animal on Shabbos.
What if the fly is obnoxious and keeps coming back?
So I'll tell you something. Halachically, it is preferable to trap the fly than to kill the fly. Because trapping the fly, you could be in this kind of area of rabbinic trapping, because you're not using the fly, and trapping was only for using. But killing the fly will be a doraisa, whatever you're killing it for, and therefore, if you can trap it, trap it. If you shouldn't really kill the flies in Shabbos.
So when you trap
all mosquitoes, yes. Unless you've then got malaria or something, that's a different thing.
When you trap an insect, are you allowed to take it outside and can you keep it until Shabbos and then kill it?
Yeah, you could do what you like once it's trapped. It's going to be muksa. I'm not going to get into a whole discussion about muksa again, but it's basically going to be muksa, and you have to work out how to carry the muksa. You can carry muksa in an indirect way sometimes. I was on safari many years ago in Botswana, and we went with a whole group of people from Ramat Bechemesh, a whole group from Har Nof. It was an amazing safari. It was a young rav there from South Africa who's setting up a safari company. And he basically said, you'll be my guinea pig. And I'll give you a great deal. And it was a great deal. We didn't pay very much at all. He says, but you'll have to be mochel me if everything goes wrong, because this is the first time I've ever done it. So, and it was amazing. Nothing went wrong. It was absolutely incredible. But we were staying in some lodge by the Chobe River. And then all of a sudden on Shabbos morning, her screaming and shouting from the room next to us, like, what's going on? What had happened is the father of the other families, so his kids were asleep in bed, and the father walked into their room, and he saw this enormous spider walking up the bedclothes, this enormous, like, African spider. And so immediately he just grabbed the nearest thing and starts screaming and banging it. I don't know what the screaming did. I don't think the spider cares about the screaming. But he basically killed the spider on the spot. Of course, you've got to do that. It could have been a tarantula. I don't know what it was. It could have been completely harmless. But, you know, you can't take any chances. Let's talk about two other things before we finish. First of all, let's talk about guide dogs. Yes, sorry.
I just wanted
to say, a broomstick?
It wants to land on
a broom?
And then I have pigeon and I stuck it out.
You see, you pick up a lot of tips here. If you have a bird trapped in your house, walk around with a broom. The bird thinks it's a tree, and it lands on the broom, and you walk it out. You see, you come to learn Torah, and actually, you also learn important life advice. I really need to go on, but... Oh, good. So, good. So the children shouldn't step on the ants on Shabbos. If the children are small, first of all, the children shouldn't be killing animals anyway. Sam, forget about Shabbos. Why kill? Okay, whatever. But you shouldn't drive your young children crazy with Shabbos. You know, if the kids are 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, like they don't need to be keeping Shabbos. But once the kids are old enough to be tavchinuch, 6, 7, 8 years old, they should be told that you shouldn't step on the ants. Now, you don't have to be OCD. If you're walking down the streets and you don't know there are ants there, there are all sorts of halachic issues. You don't have to worry about that because it's a zavah she'en miskaven. You're not trying to step on the ants. Maybe the yes, there are ants there. Maybe there are no ants there. Even if there are definitely ants there, which is called a psik resha, it's noy nichale, you're not interested. There's a whole shear on just the ants. But that's not for now. There's only so much hilchos Shabbos we can cope with in one day. Let's talk about service dogs for the blind. Completely different topic. Obviously, nowadays, there are many, many animals which are trained, usually Labradors, etc., to help people who are blind, and they want to take them into shul. Are you allowed to take a dog into a shul or to the kotel, etc.? Have a look at this interesting piece of Gemara Talmud Yerushalmi number 18. Tani, it's taught, Batei Knesiot, shuls, u'batei midrash, and batei midrash. Ein noigim behem kalad rosh. You have to behave appropriately in them. You can't be silly in them. Lo ochlin, you're not allowed to eat. Lo shotim, you're not allowed to drink behem. Velo metayelim behem, you can't walk around them, take shortcuts through them. Velo yishenim behem, and you can't sleep in a shul or a beis medrash. Velo nichnasim behem, lo b'chama b'yimot achama. You can't run into a shul to get out of the sun on a sunny day. And not on a rainy day to shelter from the rain. Aval shonim v'dorshim v'hem. They are there for you to learn. They are there for you to pray. They're not there for you to do anything mundane. That is the first opinion which is brought. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amar, Yeshua ben Levi disagreed and said, no. Bate knesiyos u'bate midrashos l'chachamim v'talmideyem. The shul and the Beis HaMedrash is a place for the chachamim and their talmidim. And before you understand, what he means is, that's their home. That's where they live. Just like you eat and you drink and occasionally you sleep in your home. So we want the Talmidim to feel that their home is in the Beis HaMedrash, and therefore they can eat and they can drink and they can do obviously nothing inappropriate, but they can do normal mundane activities because that is their home. And the Gemara goes on and gives an example. Rabbi Imi, Mafkid Lesafrei, Rabbi Imi used to instruct his teachers in the Beis HaMedrash. In Atun Barnash, if there comes a person to you, Gabeichem, up to you, Melachlech Be'oraita, who is not so advanced and trained, Melachlech, he's a bit dirty in his Torah, meaning he's a lower level, if someone comes into you, Le Gabeichem, compared to you, say, Hava Makablim Le, you have to nevertheless accept them, don't be elitist, invite them into Shul, Ula Chamre, with their donkey, Ula Mane, and all their tools. Don't be snobby, he said to his people. Let the people in. Ah, they've got their animals. So bring them in with their animals. Bring them in with their tools. Make them feel at home in the Beis HaMedrash. Rav Moshe Feinstein picks up on this Gemara, and he has an interesting tshuva, which we'll look at now in number 19 for a couple of minutes. Hinei b'davar hasuma, says Rav Moshe, a blind person, asher lamdu limdu lekelev, they've taught the dog, l'holicho, to walk with them. And the dog has to be with the blind person always, constantly. And the blind person wants to come to shul to daven in the minyan, lishmor kaddish, behe kaddish, kedusha, etc., kriyas haTorah, kriyas haMegillah, kedoma. Asher hakelev muchrach likanes imo, even though the dog has to come into shul. Or sheyesh bezeh bizayon, or is this a bizayon lahachnis balchayim, if to balchayim, to bring animals into a shul, the Beis HaKnesses, shehu mikdash ma'at. And you certainly weren't allowed to take an animal into the Beis HaMikdash, like a dog, so you could take a korban, but you weren't allowed to take your donkey into the Beis HaMikdash. Are we going to say the same thing about a shul? So he says the following. Hine. First of all, he brings the Yerushalmi, which I'll read quickly. Eitav Yerushalmi perig b'nei ha'ir. says Rabbi Imi Maskil Safrei Imata Barnash Gabeichon Malachlik Borais La Gabeichon Tihad Makabile Lachamu Lamane. Like we just said, he tells his teachers, accept people, even with their animals, even with their tools, let them in. For whom Mishum decided to Rabbi Shuben Levi? That's because this opinion follows Rabbi Shuben Levi. The Amasham, we just saw the Bati Knesios, the Bati Midrashos, the Chachamim of Talmidei. These are homes for the Talmidim. Could it be Gamba the Gemara Didan? And we see this in the Bavli. Amar Rava, the Rava said, Chachamim of Talmideihim, the rabbis and their Talmidim, Mutarim are allowed. What does that mean they're allowed? The Amar Yishu Ben Levi, my Bei Rabbanon. What does it mean, Bei Rabbanon? Would someone just mind shutting the door there, if you don't mind, just because it's a bit noisy outside? What does it mean, Bei Rabbanon? Beit HaDerabbanon. This is the home of the rabbi. The Imkain, if that's the case. Chazinan, the Hachnasat Chamor LeBeit HaKnesses. We see, therefore, the bringing a donkey into the shul. Ein HaKalas Rosh is not considered frivolous. Ubizayan, or an insult. Yotem Achila V'Shtia, any more than eating and drinking, V'Shena, and sleeping. Zimhaya Yotem is there, because if it was worse than those, Loi Hayan Nisa L'Tamadei Chachamim. They wouldn't have allowed it. And then in the next paragraph he says, the kivanshu who rak achila v'shtiyah. Since we see the bringing an animal into shul is no different from eating or drinking, hari lezeh mahani tanai. This, therefore, if we build our shuls al tanai, which in chutz la'aretz they do, what does it mean al tanai? That the shul is built initially on condition that the shul can be used for other things, which is the way, because shuls in chutz la'aretz are also community centers. That has been for hundreds of years. That's one of the reasons why the Altnoy Shul in Prague may well be the Altanai Shul. It may not be Altnoy, the old new shul. It's Altanai. It's built Altanai that it can be used as a community center. Our shuls are built like that. We eat when we have to in the shul. After Kol Adam, not just the Talmid Chachamim. We allow all sorts of people to eat in shuls. And the Rav Moshe gives an example. The Tzarech Mitzvah Ksaf, even for a small mitzvah, could go in Le'echol Suda Shlishis, for Shabbos, people have Shalat Sudas in shuls, She'ain Tzarech Gadol, even though they don't really need to, Shari Yochel Kol Le'echol Le'echol B'Beisoy, you could always tell people, eat at home. But no, we eat in shul, Noigin Kimad B'chol Mekon Esahate, everyone has a little Shalat Sudas in the shul. Not Dafka. Sometimes even they clear the chairs away and they put the tables out and they even eat in the shul. Not everybody has a heichal and a hall. They just have one place. Okay. The atlasot mishteh b'kriyat achasen, even to make a little l'chaim for a chasen or a bar mitzvah. No, again, hakel, we're makel like this. Asher ein barur sham sheyesh b'inyan mitzvah. Even though there really isn't a mitzvah to make a kiddush for a bar mitzvah boy, we do it nevertheless. The chassidim, don't forget Rav Moshe is a litvak. And the chassidim, he says, Noegim b'kol bati knesia shalehem lahafi af b'davar rishus mamash. The chassidim eat whenever they get a chance in the shul. Even for something which is not a mitzvah in the slightest. Kahada achila v'shtir b'yom ha-yortzeit. Like having a lachaim on a yortzeit. Which is not a mitzvah. Don't forget, the litvaks fast on a yortzeit. They don't have a lachaim on a yortzeit. So he says, for Rav Moshe to have a lachaim on a yod side is mamash not a mitzvah at all, but they're mekel, the chassidim are mekel, and therefore he says, that's fine. Or lachain, therefore, kevin shebach nasat hachamor, since by bringing in a donkey chazin and sheloi garam achila v'shtia, it's no worse than eating and drinking, v'shena and sleeping, yesh lahatu b'bati knesset shalanu she'al tanai, certainly we can allow our shuls which are built al tanai, heimah shios imhu v'shatat chak, if it's necessary. Uvadai shekeled loy garam ichamor, and a guide dog is for sure no worse than donkey. The ein lanu, he says a very sensitive thing. Ein lanu shafat chag gadol mizeh. There is no greater need than to help somebody who is blind, he says. Sheim loy natirena yitzbatel kol yamav mitzvila betibor. Are you going to tell this person they can never daven in shul? Ukriyas haTorah, kriyas haMegillah, betibor vegam yesh yamim sheagmas nefesh gadoila. There are days when it's very painful for people, but they can't get to shul. Could go b'yamim nerayim, like on Rosh Hashanah. B'chiyah gavna, she rabbi mitasim. Everybody's in shul and nebach. They're at home, and this will be true, I'm sure, of a woman with a guide dog, even though she maybe technically doesn't have the same chiyuv to daven in a community. Nevertheless, the svara is the same thing. She feels very left out that she's at home. Ulachain, Raya gedola sheyesh lahati lahasuma. You can certainly allow the blind person shehakelev shemolichim tzarich liot etzlo tamid is allowed to be with him always. Likanish lebeit haKnesses. You can allow the blind person into the Beit HaKnesset with the dog. Lehit palel lishmo kriyas haTorah. Achtoiv sheyeshiv samuch lahapetach. Try to put the person or the dog maybe near to the entrance. Shalola balbel etzatzibot, so that everyone doesn't get upset by the dog, whatever. That's just a question of bein adam lechavera, sensitivity to the other people in the shul. And then he brings brilliantly a little piece at the very end. Look at three lines from the bottom. The ayin bebrochas. I'd never seen this Gemara before. I looked it up and it's a very nice Gemara. Sheperish Rashi. Rashi explains, the hada Abaya marbile imra. Abaya's mother, actually was his stepmother, was very nervous about mazikin, about dangerous spirits and demons and things like that. And she said that he had to always have someone with him. And therefore she trained up a little shepsel to be with him all the time. And Abaya's stepmother, I mean, Abaya said, oh, Mishagas, okay, he lets his mother do it, fine. Sometimes for parents you have to go along with a Mishagasim. So she gives him a sheep, and the sheep is with him always. The Gadeliklof Seth, she has a little sheep, and you teach the sheep to always be with him. What was Abaya doing all day, says Rav Moshe? Learning. He was in the Beis HaMedrash. In came Mash, Maksasha, Halach, Imo, Gam. So Abai was learning, and there was a sheep next to him as well. Why? Kibadav Ein. Okay, that's nice. But he says, you see from this story, obviously if there was a problem with the sheep being in the Beis HaMedrash, someone would have said, what are you doing with the sheep in the Beis HaMedrash? And since it says he had it tamid, then the sheep was with him. A beautiful application there. And therefore Rav Moshe clearly is lenient. Other poskim were strict, by the way. Rav Yaakov Reich in Switzerland said, absolutely not. You cannot have a dog in the shul, even a guide dog. And I mentioned last week that recently this came up at the Kotel. And the Kotel is actually a little bit different. Because, you know, and this is quite a controversial question generally, what is the Kotel? Is the Kotel Mikdash, Beis HaMikdash? Is it a shul? Or is it not even a shul? And the whole question of the women of the wall, and who should be at the Kotel, and what we should be doing there, and how we put mechitzas at the shul, etc. So the Kotel has its own unique dynamic. But Rav Shmuel Rabinowitz, the rabbi of the Kotel, some years ago, actually ruled that the people could not come to the Kotel with guide dogs. Rav Benny Lau was very unhappy about this, and he brought this to the attention of Rav Rabinowitz, and he brought Rav Moshe Shuva, and they discussed it, and actually Rav Rabinowitz reversed his tact, having discussed it with Rav Lau, and said that actually it is permitted, and as far as I'm aware, that is the halacha as applied today, that blind people may go to the Kotel with their guide dogs, based on these considerations in Rav Moshe Shuva. Some closing thoughts. First of all, the animal world, I just need to finish, I've only got 3 minutes, excuse me. The animal world is there for all sorts of things for us to learn from. Look at number 20, beautiful Midrash number 20. Da'amar Rabbi Chiya, my dichsiv, why does it say in Iyuv, Malfeinu mibahamot? Malfeinu is from the word ulpam. You taught us, you teach us from the animals. Okay, mibahamot aret. And you teach us wisdom from the animals, from the birds of the sky. Rashi says, the animal world can teach us many things. And the Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, quite a famous midrash, even if the Torah had never been given to us, we could have learnt personal dignity from the cat. Says Rashi, she'enu matel rei b'tnei adam, because it doesn't go to the bathroom in front of people, and it covers up what it does in a very tzanua way. Gezel minimala, we could have learnt industry and not taking other people's things from the ant, and he brings different proofs, so the ant works very hard and never takes other ants' things. Arayot mi yona, we could have learnt chastity from the dove, says Rashi, she'enu nizkak elo lebat zugo, it's monogamous, and it doesn't sleep with any other mate with any other animals and or any of the doves. Derech Eretz Mitarnigol, and we could have learned propriety from the chicken, and it goes through all these things we could have learned from the different animals. Famously, the Mishnah in 21 says, Yehuda ben Tema Omer, Havi'az Kenemer, we have to be tough like a leopard. Tal Kenesha, light like a vulture. Anesha, by the way, is not an eagle, it's a vulture. Rats Katzi, we have to be quick like a hind, like a deer, for gibur kari, and we have to be strong like a lion, la'asot ratzon avicha b'shamayim, like to do to do what we have to do in our avodas Hashem. And I brought you, I'm not going to go through it now, but in number 22, the Torah chooses to use this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos as his opening for the Torah, that you have to be strong like a leopard, meaning if people mock you, if people make fun of us, that we're doing mitzvahs, etc., we have to be tough, stubborn, and maintain that commitment, and we have to be wrapped like a tzi to run for mitzvahs, and we have to be light in the way that we look at things we shouldn't be, focused on things that we're not meant to be looking at. We have to be like a bird in that sense, and gibuk ha'ari, to get up in the morning. It's interesting, because if you ever see a lion getting up in the morning, they take like 3 hours to stretch, and then 4 hours to yawn, and etc. It doesn't mean you get up like a lion, it means when a lion does something, when he decides to do something, it does it. And it doesn't get distracted, and therefore getting up in the morning, the first halach in Shulchan Aruch is to get up in the morning. Actually, the truth is, the first halach in Shulchan Aruch is to go to bed on time at night, the night before, so that you can get up in the morning, and he brings this all from the animals. And I found you, just to finish off with, a beautiful, very touching midrash that I'd never seen before. Key number 23. The Talmud Yerushalmi has a little piece, it says as follows. Raya chalbon chalav. There were a group of shepherds that were milking the animal. The asa chivra, and a serpent came along. The achamine, and dipped itself into the milk to drink from the milk and put poison into the milk. And they didn't see. The havakalba misakilbe, but the sheepdog was watching. The kadatun yelchu, when the shepherds went to drink from the milk, mishranavach bahon, the dog started barking at them to warn them. The loy itzbananun, but they didn't pay any attention to the dog. The seifer, and in the end, what did the dog do? Achil, it drank the milk umit, and it died. It sacrificed itself to save the shepherds. And actually, this version of the medrash, which appears in Psikta de Rav Kahana, which is a much lesser known medrash, it adds a line at the bottom, which I put in bold in 24. The Kovrine, and the shepherds buried the dog there. The Avdon Leinasha, and they made a monument at Kadon. And to this day, says the Midrash, Midkarei, it is called Nasha the Kalba, the tombstone of the dog. Because the dog here was the man's best friend, and it's a touching way, I think, to end the relationship between people and animals, that we certainly take them seriously and we learn from them and use them in an appropriate way, and Be'ezrat Hashem, the people and animals can live together on this planet in a way which is mutually beneficial to all of them. Next week, a different topic. As I said, next week we were going to go on to this issue of halakhic change given social change, which we left off a few months ago. We've got one more section to learn on that, and then I'll be away for a couple of weeks, and then I think we'll get into the issue of minag, which we haven't talked about ever at all, which is fascinating in many different directions. Everyone have a good week. It's God, I'll see you next week.
I was raising my hand.